stop the signal.
All right, everybody, welcome to The Signal. Today we've got a very, very special guest. You may recognize him from the main show. Bird, thanks for joining me today.
Gua, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing really well. I'm recovered, I think, from Childerberg fully, if one can actually do that. And Jack, I'm juiced up, man. I'm juiced up. I'm ready because we've been talking about some interesting things where our interests weirdly collide with respect to Bitcoin, Lightning Network, and then also some philosophy. So I think we're going to get into that today. And then before we end the episode, just for all the listeners, this, we God knows when Bird and I get together, we're going to hop from leaf to leaf here. But by the end of it, I am going to jam in some introductory stuff to Lightning Network that will get, that will help get you started if you haven't already got started. Much like my intro or getting started in Bitcoin episode, you know, a few months back, which if you haven't listened to that, maybe that's a good one to listen to before you get here. And then I will also provide a link to a very cool Lightning node that may or may not be mine that you can connect to. And that should give you, that node is very well connected and it should give you quite a bit of liquidity for getting started. So those are the things that I have to offer you, the listener, today. And with that, I guess we will get started a little bit. So before we started recording, Bird, we were talking about the Colonial Pipeline hack.
Yeah, I figured it would be a good jump off.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So before we started, there's a lot of people banging pots and pans for them having used or should have used Monero, and I think that this is an interesting. And you were asking me if you could have used Lightning Network, and the answer is yes and no. At this time, so the short answer is probably not, and the reason for that is several fold, but they moved about 65 bitcoins, and I think it was, and I don't know if the liquidity is available on the Lightning Network because we're still bootstrapping it. I don't think that liquidity would have been available for them to move that much, at least not without some work. But it does highlight the. But going forward, at some point, yes, you would be able to move that very anonymously on the Lightning Network. I just don't think you could now.
And you're saying it's interrelated with liquidity, and can you explain that to me, a dummy?
So unlike the main chain, the Bitcoin base layer, Lightning operates basically through a series of payment channels that create a mesh network. And so one way to envision this is, you know, those like the slidey abacus type toys.
Yeah.
So if we were to open up a payment channel, I may have, depending on how much I want to fund on my side and depending on how much you want to fund on your side, maybe I have five abacus rings or whatever you want to call them, widgets, and you have five widgets on your end. And we can pass those back and forth within the limits of how many are actually in that channel, which would be 10 total. And we can pass them back and forth an infinite number of times to pay each other for various things. And that's how that works. But we can never, in our channel alone, we can never work with any amount of money that is greater than 10 abacus rings, because that is the channel that we opened. That's the liquidity available in the channel that we opened. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes.
So that's actually how you can envision the Lightning Network. And I guess we're going to just hop from technical to philosophical, probably back and forth throughout the episode. But that is essentially how you can envision the Lightning Network working. Now, not just the channel that we've opened, but I may have channels open to 10 other people. And Bird is able to route through my node by sliding abacus rings down to my side. And then I will in turn slide abacus rings down to someone else I'm connected with, and it will route that payment through me. And you know, as more and more people join the network and open more channels, it essentially becomes a mesh network. And over time, there is a new, addition to the protocol that's coming, called Atomic Multipath Payments, where you won't need to just find one route. You can actually split up a payment and find different routes for pieces of the payment. So a lot of this stuff is, again, we're bootstrapping the Lightning Network right now. I'm actually impressed with how usable it is, you know, only a few years in, but it will only become more usable and more user-friendly as we go forward. But basically, I guess the long and short of it is, I'm not sure there's enough abacus rings and to actually route that payment in an efficient manner.
I found it, just to communicate this as somebody who's, when I went over to your house and we were kicking around and you were like, let me show you Lightning. And you pulled up, it's Bitcoin Core is what you pulled up, the...
Well, I was using Umbral, but Umbral uses Bitcoin Core as its client.
So I got to see it, and that was way more educational than ever hearing anybody talk about it.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
So I would seriously strongly recommend either a YouTube video, or if you know somebody who uses Lightning Network, demand they show you what it looks like.
Yeah, it's cool.
Because once
you
see it, that abacus ring metaphor that you're using in Umbral is quite literally how it looks on the side panel. Yeah. You literally have a bar in two colors, usually a dark blue indicating you, a light blue indicating the other person who you're staking with, is a good word for it.
Yeah, you've opened a channel with, or what? Yeah,
it literally looks like an abacus. And once you envision it that way, you can see exactly how this kind of a system works.
Yeah.
So I thought that was very, very enlightening. And no pun intended, but I think it's a good way to communicate that sort of a network to people, mesh in general, but that specifically.
Right. So I forgot. When you came over, I showed you the Umbral, and there's a number of products that basically package all of these things that you need to be running in a very user-friendly way. And you saw how user-friendly Umbral is. There's also like Mynode, BTC, Raspi Blitz, a couple of others. And I'm sure there will be more that come to market over time. Or you can simply run Bitcoin Core I have a Bitcoin Core instance on a Linux box. I could download LND or C Lightning or something like that and run it on top of that and do it manually, which I have done. But you know, they just package it up in a very user-friendly way. And like, like Bird's saying here, it's, once you see it, it's quite intuitive, particularly for how complex it sounds initially.
That's what I was so stunned by, is you opened the screen and I went, oh, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't need to show me anything. Once whoever was the graphic designer for Umbral did an excellent job of visualizing what this network looks like, because I saw it immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they all props to them. They, I've actually been trying to get them on this show, but I haven't gotten a response from anybody.
Let them know we know Hunter Biden. That would be very persuasive. Yeah.
Maybe that'll get them on here. Okay. So back to the Colonial Pipeline.
Yeah.
To answer your question, I think for the reasons that I've stated, I think it would be difficult. But I think that this overall, you know, when you're talking about Monero or using Monero, I think that this is this particular instance really highlights the problem with Monero. And the problem with Monero is not the privacy feature of Monero, it's the people using it. And so if you look at how, if this hack wasn't the FBI themselves, which is looking
which it is, but
like
yes,
it, yeah. But if it were just an incompetent incompetent hacker or whatever, who went through all these blunders, how would Monero have helped them? They were using a wallet that was associated with on a KYC exchange. And so this is kind of the issue with Monero, is that it almost gives you a false sense of security. And there is almost no way, unless you are an absolutely elite user, that you're going to be able to use Monero in a way that protects the privacy. In other words, Monero is not the weakest link here. It's the user. It's by a long shot. You're going to expose your IP address. You're going to expose your actual address by using an on exchange wallet. You know what I mean? I mean, it's almost silly.
So just to clarify where you're at with it, you're not necessarily saying that it wasn't a use case for Monero there, but that Monero has so many other attack vectors that anybody other than a serious expert would probably fall into one way or another. Is that
yeah? And it's not Monero itself. It's the user and their interactions with the internet protocol and things like that. I mean, it's not right. Like,
because one of those few situations where I was like, for the time being, it seems like Monero would have been the better thing to get the payment in. But
if you used it correctly, yeah. But nobody's going to.
Right. Well, I'm willing to accept that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of why it's like it would be like having, you know, someone who's never shot a gun before having a automatic 50 cal. It was like, you're not going to be able to.
Let's say you hack that pipeline. What are you requesting where, and where are you putting that money?
Yeah, you know, I think that you know, you would create an address with, you know, if you create an address with Bitcoin Core behind Tor, and particularly if you were going to do this I might even just connect to a satellite, and that way you're not really at all risking leaking your IP address. I wouldn't think. I mean, I'm not a security expert, but I would probably load up Bitcoin Core on a fresh, you know, Ubuntu instance or maybe Tails or something like that, and then have it connect with the Blockstream Bitcoin satellite, create a new address, demand it goes there, using some kind of very secure messaging. You know, it would be really difficult, I guess.
Because you got to launder it at some point, right?
I mean,
I guess, you know, maybe you don't, if you just hold on to it until...
Yeah. Until people just don't care anymore, I guess. or you play the long game and the flip happens. You could mix it. You know, and then you'd really be putting to test how good the mixing services are, which I think if you use like Join Market or something like that, yeah. I mean, the other thing you could do is, let me think. You might be able to. You could probably use Lightning or some side chain in some kind of method of tomfoolery to kind of disguise it. But I think probably the first go-to bet would be to just mix it and pray that that's enough.
And I do want to say, I'm sure everybody in your audience already knows this, but for my own clarifications, they didn't attack the protocol,
no,
the user base, no, the network, or anything like that. They used the system they always use, the law, to get people, the law. God, I can't say that word. The law. That's crazy. I just realized I can't even say that word. I can never read Friedrich Bastiat. Law. Crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. So they used the same system they always use in order to get this, to track this down. And you're absolutely right. I don't know. You had remarked about this in text. You can't just buy a new cold storage, like, to just get it started, at least. Like, because the way that they got caught, and I use that with about 17 quotation marks, the way that they got caught was that they just didn't, number one, have any patience, I guess, and number two, didn't just buy a new cold storage. Because to me, if I'm taking 60 Bitcoins, it's just going to sit there. I'm not going to move it, not for a long time. I'm going to be a billionaire by the time that it's worth it to pull it out. I don't know why they were trying to launder it out now. You imagine some, like, the hacker's got a day job, right? Like, mm-hmm. It seems like bad time preference, really.
Yeah, I think, no, 100%. I think I would create a multi-sig arrangement on, probably mostly an offline computer. And then create one public address to send it to, and then I just wouldn't touch it for forever. No, and I don't think
years,
there would be any way. There, in terms of just over the Bitcoin protocol, there wouldn't be any way, I don't think, to really trace that. Now, the messaging is probably where you're going to get boned.
Probably. You could probably literally just hold it there until the statute of limitations runs.
Yeah, right.
And then you're good.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably all that. But so I wouldn't even say that was a big ticket news item. It was just classic, you know, the FBI, whatever. Enough said.
Yeah, it's, and by the way, again, my stance is the entire thing was completely and utterly fabricated.
Yeah.
I do believe that the Colonial Pipeline got hacked. Mm-hmm. I just don't have any reason to believe that it happened the way that they say it happened.
Right.
Zero reason.
Exactly. So the other big news item is El Salvador. Have you seen
this? Yeah. Yes, I have, but I'm not, I don't understand the full implications. They made it a legal tender, but not the only legal tender, which means right. If you have Bitcoin, you can pay your taxes with it is ultimately what that means.
Well, I think what they're moving to is that and this is going to be a clunky implementation because it's a government and it always is. But I think what they're probably going to move to is trying to, and I'm going to use the word persuade, but we all kind of know what that means. Their citizenry to accept and send both US dollar and Bitcoin. And I think that this is probably in efforts of if you're in the driver's seat of the nation state, in an effort to decouple yourself from the whims of the IMF and you know, all the big major banking cartels. So they're trying to force their citizenry to start to convert over to Bitcoin. And I think that in their mind, when they start to do that, they'll get the ball rolling and people will realize how easy it is. And then, start to, you know, it'll pick up momentum. There's going to be a lot of friction along the way, I think, but, it's an interesting thing. I mean, it's an interesting thing. And I think a lot of Latin America is joining along with them.
I was going
to
say
to see an absolute landslide of, I know second world countries that are traditionally reserved for, like, you know, communist countries that are somewhat productive, but you know what I mean, like kind of productive countries that aren't really a part of the first world. You know, I don't think I would classify, well, I mean, maybe I should, but like Costa Rica, I wouldn't like say is a third world country, even though maybe they are, but you know what I mean? Like they have some production there. They have some semblance of property rights, et cetera, et cetera. I think you're going to see a lot of those guys start to go that way, particularly if the Venezuelan the El Salvadorian instance is successful.
The BTC community was very happy about this move. I mean, most of you guys seem that way. Can you tell me what the first thing was that made it that way? What was so satisfying about this?
It's satisfying in the sense that it's satisfying in the sense that we're getting a feel for where we're at in the timeline of adoption. Not in a sense that we are looking for nation states to adopt Bitcoin, because we just all, you know, the hardcore Bitcoiners believe that this is an individual choice that people will adopt over time, you know, one by one by one by one until we're at whatever it is, however, you know, 3 billion, 4 billion, whatever, the productive population of the world. But it means that we are at the stage that we kind of thought we would get to. And I thought this was still a little ways off. And that is the stage where countries countries, states, you know, whatever, municipalities are competing to get Bitcoin or to get Bitcoiners so that they can then get Bitcoin. And whether they have tomfoolery in plan as part of the plan, and they may, or whether they're kind of just realizing that their best out is to just bank on Bitcoin and becoming rich before a dissolution of their power structure. I didn't think that we were going to get here this quickly. And so really the satisfaction comes as saying, oh, okay, it's just another check mark of the legitimacy of this project, I think is what I'm saying, not because a government accepts it, but because they're competing for it and they recognize its value.
Yeah, right. That's so that what I had an interesting conversation. Well, not a very short exchange about gray market, black market, white market. And the conclusion that I've started to come to is obviously the white market is the market to win. And so I like the idea that states are starting to adopt it, because the old Cody Wilson line, you will have to adopt your way because of what's happening. And that is, to me, probably the most peaceful form of adoption.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then secondarily, definitely the most intelligent. Meaning, if we still are going to have government services, certainly they're going to become a lot more voluntary with this kind of a relationship. And then they're also going to have to be competitive and a lot more efficient. I don't see any reason for competition in a white market with a black market or a gray market. It's not competition. It's more like warfare. And the white market is very good at waging that kind of a war against the other two. And what I really like to see is that Bitcoin is like climbing itself out from the black into the gray and then into the white. Because I think the statute's up on this one. I used to literally, back in the day, used to go on the Silk Road and like mm-hmm. buy acid with Bitcoin that I would buy yeah. from my friends. Mm-hmm. And that was black market. So Bitcoin started in this black vortex. Satoshi's white paper is nothing like where I remember it starting, obviously. It was Satoshi's white paper is just, here's the protocol. But the way that it started to be used at first was, at least from what I remember, in that very shadowy area for all kinds of things. And then other people came in and were like, well, why don't we just kind of open up, you know, all kinds of markets with this gray mm-hmm. now. And yeah. now you're starting to see, quite literally, the thing is coming out of the cave to show itself, and states are having to grapple with that in a way that they didn't have to, when they could just say there's just people buying drugs with this and right. not doing anything. Now there is quite literally a, oh shit, it doesn't matter where it came from. It's kind of undeniably here now.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. And it's present. It is, the people are seeing its utility for international payments and the middlemen that you can avoid. Which of course, you know, and with regards to black and gray and white markets, I think a lot of agorists and libertarians get really caught up in mm-hmm. that.
Me too.
And seeking out black markets. But, I would submit that for me, the only thing defining what a black market is mm-hmm. some politician. And I don't regard
absolutely.
Them as legit- I don't regard those people as legitimate. And so there are no black markets for me.
Yes. All yes. That is exactly what I said. All markets are one market. There's only one market.
Now,
just the market.
Some jerk off with a pen may disagree, but I don't recognize him as legitimate. And so for me, I seek out markets. That's it.
Yes.
There is no, I do not seek out black markets. I do not seek out mm-hmm. gray markets. I do not seek out white markets. I seek out
right.
markets, and I don't give one shit what some politician says about it. And that mm-hmm. is going to, that is also very applicable to Bitcoin because of its international nature, its global nature. So it's what may be a gray market or black market activity someplace is a white
right.
market activity somewhere else, and Bitcoin doesn't know the difference, and that's a very good thing. It is very neutral.
Exactly.
You know, the obsession with the black market thing is just, I think, is bending the knee to politicians. And
I agree.
It's kind of cuckery, and so I do yep. not participate in that.
Totally couldn't agree with you anymore, dude. When the king in town says, here's what you can do and here's what you can't, and you do, and you go, okay, I'm going to do all the things that you say I can't do, you are more limited
yes.
than doing what you want.
And you're obeying in some sense.
Literally, you are. You yes. are a reactionary. And yep. and we all know reactionaries are part of the system. That's quite literally how the system advances, is it creates an empty space and then it moves in to fill the empty space.
Yes.
It's absolutely foolish. And it also subordinates, and this is what I hate the most, it subordinates the market to the state. And to me, you have at least three, and I've been trying to work on this idea that there may in fact be four forces that exist in society. And they basically go capitalism, state, nomad, and I think mesh. So capitalism is very clearly potentially what we're dealing with Bitcoin, although I think it could be mesh and not capitalism. You have state, which is what it always is, from top down, daddy's at the top, all the kids are at the bottom. Then you have nomad, which is all of the BLM people, the Antifa people who exist in a kind of a blobby vortex of egoistic behavior, though they call it, you know, collectivist. And then you have mesh, which is truly egoistic and based completely around the sovereign individual and his ability to not only geographically, but potentially virtually place himself wherever he pleases. And I hate the idea that we have this white market, black market dichotomy, because 100% all that does is make it seem as if economics is subordinate to state authority.
Exactly.
Which not only is it not, but you are seeing El Salvador absolutely having to do the reverse and say, no, we have to subordinate ourselves to this financial system. That to me is the clearest picture of what we're actually dealing with here is an entirely new social system, economic system, and not something that arises out of the state.
Right. Yeah. That's a really good way to put it. That's a really good way to put it. Markets are superior to states, and to pretend otherwise, I think, is just a disservice.
Yeah.
So anyway, that El Salvador news is fairly big, probably for different reasons than both newish Bitcoiners would have you believe, and also known FUDsters would have you believe. It's just kind of another check mark. Rollo reposted an episode of me, Rollo, and Slappy talking about this in February of last year, and it's remarkable how. it was kind of spooky listening to it. It was like kind of calling it to a T a little bit, not El Salvador specifically, but, these kind of disenfranchised countries, adopting, but, like you said, that Bitcoin exists and now everybody has to grapple with that fact. And, the Bitcoin network does not know what El Salvador is.
No, it does not acknowledge El Salvador.
No, yeah, it doesn't. El Salvador is now grappling with the fact that Bitcoin exists, and they're saying, how can we, and I'm sure that the politicians there have nefarious ideas in mind. And it may not be like smoking cigars in the basement ideas, but just outright theft. I mean, they may be just trying to get Bitcoins in their country so that they can steal them,
Right.
But that's part of the game. And if those Bitcoins are custodied correctly, they won't be able to. And then we'll take the next step in this process. And the next step, it's not going to be a clean transition. It's going to be herky jerky and jolty. But over time, and that's why, that's part of why I'm doing this podcast, is to try to help people, protect their Bitcoins, like obtain Bitcoins and protect them, and use them. Before you do,
because we are going to, I'm sure we're going to talk about philosophy here. I have been eating, I don't know what you want to call it, an essay called Crypto Current by Nick Land. And I do, just since you referenced the fact that in February you had kind of spookily called what was going on, to get us into philosophy, I do want to read a section. It's 0.03 from Cryptocurrent. I don't really know how you'd read tractates out, but that's how it is. It approaches a truism, although not one for this reason to be glibly dismissed, that philosophy assumes as if by right a position of sovereign authority relative to everything it touches upon. A discussion of Bitcoin and philosophy amounting only to a confirmation of this stance would merit contempt, even if it were packaged as humor. Since any attempt to philosophize about Bitcoin would already be a joke, it's better to get it. Bitcoin seizes philosophical attention because it is already doing philosophy, or what philosophy is still on ever rarer occasions expected to do at multiple levels. It tells the truth. Bitcoin is not only a recognizable philosophical statement, but also, and more importantly, a philosophical automism, a synthetic philosophical machine. It not only philosophizes in a manner of man, although this is its certain prospect, but also finally by way of an angel or a lesser god. The intellectual intuition that is for Kant a mortal impossibility is for Bitcoin an operational principle. It is destined to close upon itself and thus know itself. By becoming time, Bitcoin promises an exhibition of unleashed thought in a way no introspective anthropology ever can. So I don't think it's spooky at all that you guys were able to call this in February, because from the beginning, the white paper says and does what is written. And it is as simple as that in its advancement, at least to me, is of course you can call. We know and have said for years what's going to happen in 30 years with Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Because Bitcoin's protocol will never change, cannot be denied, and is only ever going to go in one direction. Obviously, the protocol can be changed, but not at the level that the functionality of what it's been doing this whole time is, which is completely and utterly reconfiguring all relationships into completely contractual and voluntary ones. Yeah. That is undeniable in the same way that, I mean, human rights was undeniable to people. When you tell someone you have this now, who's going to say, no, I don't? Nobody. Nobody's right. going to deny you giving them a right. Nobody's mm-hmm. going to deny you increasing their sovereignty. That is quite literally the goal of all individual human beings, is to have more sovereignty, not less. Otherwise, why would we act at all? Why would we rebel against violence at all? Why would we do anything other than what people always tell us? Because everybody ultimately, probably as an essential quality of what it means to be human, seeks sovereignty from other human beings, as well as contractual relationships with all of them. It's not like some sort of an solipsistic egoism where you go, I don't really desire to have relationships with other people, and that is my sovereignty. No, Bitcoin is the opposite. It's the bet that people want both sovereignty and community at the same time.
Yeah.
And so to me, that is not only deeply profound, but it is the bet, and this is another Land quote, that politics will never work. Bitcoin is the bet that politics will never, ever work, because it does the undeniable, whereas politics is simply rhetoric. And so maybe that kicks us off into it, but that's where I've been at with it and why I think it's so profound, because of its undeniable factor. You have to participate or you are left completely in the dust.
Yep. Yeah, that's an interesting way of putting it. I hadn't heard that or I haven't read that before, but it is like the combination of sovereignty and community. And that is it's a relief. It's a relief. For someone particularly like me, who I am not a go out into the woods and never communicate with anyone type guy. I deeply enjoy living amongst, my community and my friends and living in, and granted, you've been to where I live. I don't live in a tremendously urban environment, but I live in a city. And I really enjoy it. It's not to say that I don't want to spend some time out in the country, but I just enjoy being around other human beings. And that enjoyment is the bedrock of that enjoyment is voluntary relationships and having that, which is sovereignty in some sense. So having that sovereignty plus community is, I think it's a little bit of a litmus test for anarchists. It's do you want to simply hate everyone and everything, or do you just want your sovereignty and you want to be productive in society and interact with it? And Bitcoin provides that option or aids in that option. It's that in combination with its global nature, the reducing supply issuance schedule, and its tie to the physical world through mining is, it's like you said, it's undeniable. It's becoming, people are realizing that it's undeniable. And I think that's part of what is reflected in this El Salvador move, whatever their motives may be. Ultimately, I think their motive is clear, is that we want Bitcoin. It should be no surprise that the countries and the organizations and the people that have been most disenfranchised by the manipulations that not only of the 20th century, centuries before, but which really came to manifest in a very visible way in the 20th century, those that have been most disenfranchised by those are the ones most eager to experiment with this protocol and this asset. Mm-hmm. I couldn't be more excited for them. I could not be more excited for a country like El Salvador that has been, in some ways is such a poster child for the American government's meddling in Central American countries, you know, the civil war that they have been going through, I mean, in some sense are still going through, but which raged through the 70s, 80s, 90s, was so cruel and unnecessary, and so driven by the United States government's just greed and wickedness, in my opinion. And to see them thumb their nose, hopefully it's successful. Who knows? You know, they're kind of, you know, they're the Colorado legalizing weed right now. And no doubt there will be some DEA raids, you know, but hopefully in the long run, their success will probably also be dependent in many ways, like Colorado, on others joining them and pushing that boulder up the hill. Because it'll be strength in numbers, and it's just going to be a fascinating decade.
Oh yeah, I think we don't get out of this decade without looking back at where we are right now and going, holy shit, not a thing is the same anymore.
Yeah.
I think human history was created on January 3rd, 2009, when he mines the Genesis block.
It's crazy.
I think that is, for the first time in human history, that is when you can say time begins, because for the first time, other than like the creation of a nuclear clock, which isn't really time, it's just matched up to a certain kind of movement. You've got interaction, 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 interaction in a chronological order at a chronological timestamp. Now you've got real time. Now you have a real analyzable moment in history where you can go, two individuals interacted, or the network began. And right. And to me, it I think that is a small change in the way we are going to look back at this period of time, because this thing is like a piece of alien technology.
I mean,
there were predecessors to it. Like, I think Szabo created BitMoney, right? Or something like there were
eCash or DigiCash or
something like that. Yeah, there were predecessors to it. But if the predecessors don't survive, then you have moments in time and not time itself. Mm-hmm. Now we have time itself, because this thing will never be stopped. The notions behind Bitcoin will never be stopped, ever. It's impossible to dismantle. And so literally the only thing that I could think could dismantle Bitcoin would be individuals' desires to no longer economically interact with one another. Good luck. I mean, maybe... Yep. We hit post-scarcity in the form of everybody plugging into a robot. But until that point, I can't see how, first of all, I can't see how economics ever goes away now.
That's individuals gonna be unfortunate for you, Bird.
Yeah, I know.
Economics denier.
This is, to me, you can't deny Bitcoin as economics. Yeah. You can attempt to deny economics if you are a sovereign autarkic individual who produces everything they consume, or their family members, because I'm willing to give autarky to a single family unit. Usually they stick together pretty well. But now you have individuals who have completely opposing interests who are working together tangentially, so tangentially that it's completely diffuse. I mean, we think about everything in terms of money, and soon we're going to be thinking about everything in terms of specifically Bitcoin. And I just don't see how that ever detaches from the human consciousness ever.
Right. And part of that is the universal agreement on truth, which I think is something that we have never achieved before as a human race. I mean, or as 100%. A species, rather. And that is, you know, as we move forward with this and more adoption, you're going to see an absolutely astounding number of individual humans dispersed across a huge globe that can all agree on truth, on a truth. And that is let's just say the block height or the ledger of transactions that have ever occurred. And various statistics about the Bitcoin network that are easily parsed using a Bitcoin client. And that is really, really wild. I mean, to have, you know, if you take something like, and this will bridge into your world, Bird, but to take something like Christianity, or any religion, but Christianity, just say for the familiarity's sake, getting people to agree on truth is so difficult.
Oh yeah, impossible. That's why we have theology. Because
I mean, right?
It's not philosophy. Yeah.
And as soon as you do, then you get, you know, like a Martin Luther or a Calvin or whatever, and you know, you get a schism, and you get a fork of truth, or maybe you found the truth, or, you know, who knows, depending on which side you're on, it is what it is. But now there is universal truth, which is something that is just absolutely profound for the species.
You want some more quotes? I got two on truth. So this is from 1.11. See, I wanted to come on your show and do a full breakdown of this article, which I certainly would like to still do, but you'll give a little taste now. So here's the first one. There are no doubt innumerable truths about Bitcoin of a kind familiar both to folk intuition and to disciplined traditions of knowledge acquisition. Whether first order, that is scientific, or second order, that is epistemological, ontological, or metaphysical, such moments of recognition will inevitably provision the discussion to follow. Yet, there is more to the topic of Bitcoin and philosophy than any of this. While Bitcoin is certainly another thing for philosophy to talk about, it is also an entirely other way of talking and doing something that has been considered central to the philosophical enterprise since its inception, the cultural production of truth. Bitcoin establishes, and in fact ultimately is, an operational truth procedure. It is less a philosophical object, therefore, than a philosophical platform, and even a philosophical automism. And then here's the second quote. Bitcoin, this is from 2.2, is a machine. More specifically, it is a credibility machine. Its ideal operation coincides with the most rigorous, realizable definition of truth. That is already to assert everything. In particular, it proposes that there are no conceivably reachable grounds of truth which offer leverage in respect to the Bitcoin protocol. It is, of course, possible, nebulously, to imagine some superior tribunal, but it is strictly impossible to access one. This is fully recognized at a low philosophical level of philosophical formality with the cryptocurrency milieu. One piece of suggestive evidence in this respect is provided by Truthcoin, now Hivemind, an altcoin designed specifically to absorb, quote, accurate data into a blockchain, providing an oracle protocol. The credibility machine introduced by the Bitcoin digital currency is thus isolated or functionally abstracted as pure truth production. But truth, surely, has to be more than that, is the predictable response. And in that appeal to the voice of metaphysics, the voice of metaphysics is heard and distilled. Truth, in its socially intelligible reference, not only need not be more than the product of a credibility machine, it cannot be anything more. Truth has no content beyond the production of credence. Untruths, finally, are badly made. Naturally, the technologically defective prototypes of such machinery, incarnated in weakly formalized social institutions, cannot be expected to surrender their privileges lightly. Even though traditional sources of epistemic authority, that is, truth authority, are unable to clearly articulate their own grounds of credibility without appeal to their own structures of prestige, this does not mitigate their sense of outraged entitlement in the slightest. It is their assumed right to be believed that speaks through intuitions of familiar truths, now cast from their formal Eden into the harsh wilderness of trustlessness, where all resilient credibility has to be explicitly earned by a demonstrated application of computational power. So again, what he's basically saying there is exactly what you hit on, is it the only truth is certainly culturally produced, and the only truth can ever be a truth about credibility. And Bitcoin, he is basically saying, is the production of credibility.
That's interesting. Yeah, I need to read some of this.
I know. I'm going to show you the whole thing, and luckily for you, I have all the highlights in it already. So
all right,
don't do that. Yeah, what I found was really funny is you should look up Truthcoin and Hivemind. An altcoin. And he's not saying because it has any functional value. He's saying because it really does reveal what people ultimately want out of Bitcoin, which is pure truth.
Right.
And
it's
really funky how I looked into Hivemind. It's really funky thing. Very, very interesting, like, attempt to do that, to distill accurate, different kinds of accurate data onto a blockchain. And that's ultimately where we are headed, is we are headed to a point of objective truth. We have to abandon a priori's. We have to abandon rationalism entirely for pure protocolism. Whatever the protocol has written down is the truth. Anything other than that is merely a suggestion of some kind, or a logical operation of some kind. But there's no logic to Bitcoin. It's a pure protocol. Logic, of course, in the sense that we have to meet it out with one another, and it relies entirely on our ability to make different kinds of associations and have the best rhetorical arguments. Ultimately, that's all a priori is. Otherwise, the first a priori guy, Kant, and the latest a priori guy, Rothbard, would agree entirely, and they do not.
Right.
And so this, for me, this is the truth. I had a great conversation with Rollo about truth and not truth and postmodernism and a priori. And what's funny is at the beginning, you remember he says to philosophize about Bitcoin is already a joke. And I think we were stumbling on the punchline in that conversation, is that there's ultimately neither of us had real credible truth, but how could anybody look at the blockchain and go, the things on here didn't happen? Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, the most profound thing about Bitcoin that I have realized is that it does absolutely debunk any functional sense of solipsism. When you have got individuals who are confirming a transaction that you make, to me, that is no clearer evidence that I'm not the only person who's walking around here. That there is, at least in some functional sense, other people's whose credence is as reliable to me as mine is to them. And so we are on equal playing fields now. That, to me, that is the most undeniable thing about it, is we now officially, functionally, mechanically know that there's at least enough people who exist who are on the blockchain. Mm-hmm. It's weird. We're all going to become nodes, which is, I mean, we have always been that way, but I think Bitcoin is revealing that we have always been nodes in a larger social system, which Bitcoin right now is still a financial system. But, you know, again, truth coin, truth. We're getting to the point where it's all of the lines between social, economic, blah, 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 are all becoming very blurred into one single operation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I think I read somewhere like that. No true expert on Bitcoin exists, because it would have to draw from so many different aspects of study. I mean, you know, economics,
yeah,
and history, and game theory, and
absolutely,
you know, and,
yeah,
and psychology, and you know, all these different things. It's it merges. It's a nexus. It's a node itself in some sense of humanity, like, and
it's the mono
talking about it in these grandiose, in such grandiose terms, but I don't think people realize how profound, to circle back, a truth machine is, that that you can have people all around the world that agree on a truth that is so wild to the human experience, that I don't think that gets enough credit. I mean, I don't know if
No, there is nothing.
Yeah, I mean, there's a really good,
another really good, one of the things that he harps on, and I referenced the idea of the bet against politics before, is he's got another really good quote in here. The philosophically pressing motive for hesitation, however momentary, at this point of origin, where the balance between the virtual and the actual is most dramatically precarious, is to hold open the question of primordial introduction, even as it tends to eclipse itself. So already, during this remarkably brief embryonic phase, when Bitcoin was implemented only with words, he's talking about when it was simply a white paper, it was at least double. It was at once a title and a topic. From the beginning, the term Bitcoin pointed beyond the name of a text, Bitcoin, to a virtual entity, something that could be made to happen, or that was, being rigorously outlined, already being made to happen. In being drafted, it was, in fact, initiated, even released, And through its preliminary scripting, it had already been informally pre-programmed or practically introduced. Bitcoin has existed from the moment it was named, and its origin could be pushed back further still. Such occult potentiation of the semiotic event, that is, in the event of the creation and association of a sign with language, is what is to code in the modern sense of this term. It is something much more than a description. This is why it's truth. As code, writing is transported beyond representation to an operational horizon, where it builds what it says immediately. Language that cannot follow along this path is already a husk, inconsequential by essence, unless politics can save it. In parentheses, Bitcoin is the bet that it cannot. So we are, as transhumanistic as it is, we have to come to terms with the fact that the only way we can have truth is through agreed upon code. That's it.
Yeah.
We are at we were having a discussion about, you know, finally the preference of individuals have towards gold and not as a store of value, as a aesthetic piece, and what it reflects and represents. And I think that was where all this kicked off from, was the very profound realization that if gold loses its attachment to functional value, which it absolutely already has, and people are simply starting to realize that, then it at the same time loses any functionality as an aesthetic reflection. Why would anybody give a shit about gold if everybody says gold is as valuable as wood? Because it doesn't serve a otherwise wood would be valuable. If it was an incredible store of value, we would simply use wood for everything. Mm-hmm. But they want to use gold. So if the store of value collapses, then its aesthetic reflection also collapses. And so I don't know what that means for aesthetics generally, but there's a huge conversation to be had about the aesthetics of Bitcoin and what it is going to dismantle. And gold is certainly, as an aesthetic quality, gold teeth, gold chains, completely loses its value. I mean, beyond any other metal or color that a person likes when they see it. Because value is being transferred from the actual and therefore able to reflect itself aesthetically in the actual to the virtual. But I don't know how the virtual reflects aesthetics yet. So that's what's so interesting to me is, in 10 years, if Bitcoin in 10 years is the global currency, then you can very quickly expect to see all forms of aesthetics collapse unless they're relying entirely on like some weird eternal return. Hey, our ancestors used to wear gold and think it was cool, so let's pretend it is. You know what I mean? Like it would only ever be a parody of the original thought. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because I mean, gold traditionally is a way to gold and silver and things like that were traditionally a way to signal your, you know, wealth and your ability to provide for a family. It was, you know, that's kind of, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's essentially where it derived. It was scarce, it was hard to come by, and you could signal your you know, ability to provide for a family by showing that you had gold,
right?
That was how you showed your wealth, and there is no real way that we know of now to effectively, you know, show your Bitcoin or whatever.
You can't, and what's even funnier is, now think gold we still have some sort of attachment to. You remember the old idea of making it rain?
Yeah, right.
Now imagine if we were in an office space and I made it rain paper. Who cares?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
That's just a small example of like fiat for a little bit became an aesthetic signifier. And then everybody realized, wow, that's stupid. So nobody makes it rain anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's going to happen with gold.
Right. Yeah, no, it's going to be very bizarre. So how does this, and this crosses over almost into like the built world and into like an architecture's kind of preferred spaces. Like what are the communities that we build? What do they reflect? What are the values that they reflect? What is the goal? When you walk into a wealthy person's house, it no longer is the staircase gilded in gold flake. It is what? I don't know. I have no idea. But I suspect that we will, you know, broadly speaking, If I hear time preference one more time, I'm going to stab myself. But again, I think that you will see a shift towards longer term. That, you know, you won't have as many stick built houses. You know, you will have family homesteads, and they will be built to, you know, for the long term, multi-generational occupancy and things like that. I mean, beyond that, I don't know if I could really speculate too much, but I do think that you will see a resurgence in the magnificence of even day-to-day things, that people will be willing to put more time and effort into longer term thinking when it comes to the built world.
Yeah. I completely agree. That is to me the weirdest part is usually human beings are the last thing to get in the door. Like the technologies that we create are almost always supersede our ability to handle them, and that's why they usually run us ragged. Uh-huh. And it's just weird to imagine I had an idea that people were just going to start wearing like steel dog tags with their wallet addresses on them. Go check how much I'm worth. You know what I mean? Like, because we will always want to signal value because human beings will always attempt to be hierarchically better than others. I don't think Bitcoin is going to collapse that notion, although maybe it will, which would be an even stranger existence. But super weird to even imagine how people would do the thing we've always done, which is try to get women through wealth signaling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so how do we do that? How do we do that now is we have to do anything goes. What I think it is anything goes. It's going to become more about superseding the signal than signaling itself. Like, it doesn't matter what you're wearing, how expensive the shirt you're wearing is. It sort of matters, like, the fact that you could have afforded that shirt in the first place, but it doesn't matter in a functional sense. Like, the shirt might have zero resale value to anybody other than you or the person who sees it and goes, yeah, that means you have a lot of your higher class or you have more wealth, right? It's not because gold is going to be as valuable as wood again, or more or less compared to Bitcoin. None of it is really very valuable in particular at all. And so it's just weird. I that's the only thing I am stumbled on is I don't know what we're going to look like in 10 years because of Bitcoin.
So if I may venture this, I'm cobbling this together in my head as we speak. So I think that you can't be because of the absence of, you know, I think that the existence of Bitcoin will ultimately preclude the existence of the state as we know it. And because you cannot signal wealth with Bitcoin without incurring risk to yourself.
That's true too.
Through theft. Yeah. I think it might be the case that your signaling will be inextricably linked to your insurance and or security company. That's such a weird, like, nerdy pencil neck thing to say, but it may be the case that, you know, what is it, the Amex Black card or Platinum card or whatever that you use to pay for things, that signals your wealth. People don't have to know how much you have necessarily, but they know that you have been issued this card and that you must be therefore worth something. It may well be the case that you have some sort of insignia from your security conglomerate or co-op or however it is. And you say, and that's how you attract a mate. You say, well, if you marry me, you can marry into the most secure existence that we know.
Yeah, I do believe security and sovereignty are going to become aesthetic values far more than they are now. Because what's funny is now that you say, like, black Amex card flashing, right? There's a few ways you can do what Safadin does in the beginning of his talk about, I forgot what the Bitcoin standard, he does a actual talk about it, and the first thing he hits on is hardness of money.
Yeah.
And, like, what's funny is if someone flashes a black Amex card, there's a few possibilities. That number one, it is real, or number two, it's fake. And right there, you immediately are placed into a quantum of value where you, unless you know for sure it's a real card, the value could potentially be zero. And so right there, you have to have trust or appraisal skills or whatever the case may be. Now, the second thing is there's two guys who could have real black Amex cards And you don't know their individual values because of that. You just know that they're more valuable than the gold Amex card or the silver Amex card people. And so you still have a quantum of value where people are competing with one another for that. Bitcoin, and I do agree with you, nobody would want to flash their actual value because you are your node. Like if someone wants your money, in the old days, they got to take you by a gun, take you over to an ATM, make you withdraw it. Relies on them not being spotted by anybody in the process of doing this. You know what I mean? Where now, if you're even if you're multi-sig, who knows where you have those multi-sigs at? I mean, it could be one could be buried in the ground. One could be in a bank vault somewhere. Who knows? The point is, it's much more easily accessible to attack you specifically without ever really having to deal with outside forces noticing you're attacking a person. So you now have, I agree with you, you probably would never actually have people really signaling their wealth very much. But it is also, if wealth equals social hierarchy, which kind of the aesthetic principle suggests that it does, is that you have people quite literally on a list, which is wealth equal to aesthetic, equal to social class. And you know exactly where each one of them places down to the sat. I mean, ultimately. And that's not a good thing. See, I think it will be good for us to we do another episode on this where I really break down the entire article because there's a lot of good from where we're standing. There's a lot of, it's all inevitable. There's a lot of good and bad that if we look today at what the future is going to look like, we are, in my opinion, at the same time as we get flattened out, we're also going to be much more easily socially separated, much more appraisable. You know, some people are able, with no money, are able to win people over with their rhetorical style alone. And that's simply because they may come off as a kind of person who they are not. But again, Bitcoin, at the same time as it produces truth, the obvious other side of that is that it destroys rhetoric. And so individuals cannot get by on manipulation alone, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think people have always tried to schmooze their way to the top in ways that aren't, you know, how much they socially produce for society. But that's that there are negatives to this. And it's important that while I believe it's completely inevitable what those things are going to be, we ought to prepare for them now so that you can position yourself into it. Because this is all going to change. I mean, think about it just in the simple way. The guy who spent all his money on gold jewelry thinking, number one, it would connote aesthetic value, and that number two, it would actually be a store of value. That guy is now out both, and he's somewhere else. So he's been completely disenfranchised from his social position where he used to be. So if that's you, if that guy is you, that sucks. You know what I mean? That really sucks for you. So that I think there are positive and negative, and 100% Bitcoin's adoption equals upheaval. Obviously, things will settle, but there's going to be a massive period of intellectual, ideological, social, aesthetic, cultural upheaval. And I don't think any of it is going to be violent. I think it's going to be deeply confused. I think people for quite a while are going to be bumbling around, really trying to commit to the idea that code equals everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be a, I think, you know, there's a phrase that everybody uses gradually then suddenly. And I do think that there is going to be that tipping point where, I think I used this phrase in a, I don't know if it was TLE or on mine, but, what is that Stalin quote? Like, there's decades where nothing happens and then weeks where decades happen. I do think that there is going to be a mad dash at some point when you hit some critical mass, whatever that is. And remember that there are only so many transactions that the Bitcoin network can process per, you know, second or per minute or per block, that mad dash is going to be, is going to look pretty freaking insane as people try to scramble into it. So I don't know when that is. Anybody saying they know when it is, you know, is lying to you.
Yep.
But I would bank on it being this decade.
Yeah, I agree. Didn't you read the book of Genesis? We didn't even touch on that.
Yes,
didn't you read
the book of Genesis?
Can you explain that to me? Because I got some very interesting text messages in retirement.
Yeah,
I'm really glad about that. What were you seeking out in the book of Genesis?
So to our longtime listeners will not be a surprise, but to anybody new, I am I would say Christian friendly. I believe in God, but I am not a Christian. Like by the, I don't know much about Christianity in terms of the actual texts, beyond, you know, what I just hear about them from y'all and have heard about them through my life. But one story has always stuck with me, and that's the Tower of Babel. And I was thinking about this, with relationship to Bitcoin, where Bitcoin may in some sense become a universal language. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to text Bert about this, and I'm going to go back and read that story in Genesis. So I read the story, and I came away a little bit dissatisfied with the amount of information that I could glean because it's very short.
Yeah, very little, very short.
And so I backed up a chapter, and then I backed up another chapter, and then I just went, and then I just read Genesis.
which I'm pretty chuffed about. Yeah, but there's very little. There's probably some other Sumerian stories that reflect the same thing. Yeah.
I
did just read you that quote, and I can't find it again now, but you know, Bitcoin is the bet that it cannot language versus code. You're right. I think that's what we're talking about. I think it is that universal communicable language that cannot be confused with anything. Code changes writing from representation to operation. And you can't deny operation. That is what language ultimately seeks to do, is to create operations. But you have, but it's not perfect because it relies on reading. It relies on me and you understanding, which we never will. And this is the point that the postmodernists try to make about truth. The post-structuralists try to say about the difference between an image and the words that represent it, is that there is an infinitude of cultural context that goes into understanding and recognizing what a duck is, or what a turtle is, or what a car is. You tell kids, draw a house, and no matter where they are in the world, they will draw different, sometimes similar, with similar features, but always different houses. You cannot have a Bitcoin transaction between two individuals looking at the chain and going, okay, I'm going to draw this transaction out again, and they will come out different. No, even what's so profound to me is you can see this as simply down as the color wheel. You and I can look at the same color, red, and we have different words for the same color that we're both seeing. And that obviously goes into all the senses. People literally see colors differently. But that's the analogy. You can't do that with a Bitcoin operation. You go literally from the inception of time itself, January 3rd, 2009, when the Genesis block is mined, from that moment forward, you know the creation of the universe to every single meaningful happening within it. That doesn't happen with any other thing but code itself, and then we're specifically speaking about Bitcoin here. So it absolutely is the case that the problems of the Tower of Babel are, in a small sense, resolved. Now, remember that a universal language doesn't mean universal language, of course, because we will always have different means of communicating and misunderstandings will always arise, again, through various forms, everything from literal physical signaling to even writing down contracts. But we damn well sure know that we have a universal language in the same way that we have mathematics. Except mathematics is abstract. The Bitcoin network is not abstract in the slightest. It literally reflects material happenings.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So how about this? Let me just, how much time you got?
All the time in the world.
Okay. Let me just read. I just want to read Genesis 11 because this is the Tower of Babel story.
Yeah.
Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. As people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They said to each other, come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower the people were building. The Lord said, if as one people speaking the same language, they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so they will not understand each other. So the Lord scattered them from there over all the earth, and they stopped building the city. This is why it was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole world. From there, the Lord scattered them over the face of the whole earth. So weird, I was sitting there kind of mulling this over, and, you know, I was just kind of playing adversary to myself, but are we not creating that common language that the Lord will come down and scatter us across
the earth? You know that the word Satan equals adversary, right, in translation, so just be careful there. Anyway, yeah, but I think... So here's the satisfying and the dissatisfying. Mm-hmm. And really, depending on whether or not you think God was doing that, because once we find that impossibility task, something really bad happens for and to us. But there's two sides of it. And one is, yes, we have a universal language in the form of Bitcoin where we cannot deny the things being said to one another or anything like that. But we'll never have speech as that thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's the maybe dissatisfying part is, while I do believe there will be another tool that is undeniable, and maybe that will subsequently create even more tools that are undeniable, perhaps the more dangerous thing to think about is that if the truth process is the case and we're all, like, you know, heading to Shinar and building a tower, then, like, we have to leave our physical bodies at some point. Because in the physical, there's always going to be conflict and lack of understanding. And so the only way that if the human being's essential quest is the production of absolute truth in all cases, which I don't think that is the case, but that is certainly the case of philosophy, then the only way we get to that point is if we create and occupy truth itself. And the only way to do that is to get rid of all things that are not truth. And that's literally everything other than codes that we can create for that purpose in the form of meshes, by the way, which is also very profound. Not transcendence, not blobs, not capitalism, but sort of localized mesh and operational truth. So, no, I think we're good. I don't think we're going to get scattered, but that is certainly the implication of the story, is that... If everything is agreed upon, nothing is impossible. And clearly God sees that as a bad thing. I mean, the entire, really, Genesis, a good portion of it is dealing with humanity trying to become God and understand God. And I don't think we ever will, but that you got to believe that there are some human beings seeking that task out. And I don't know. I think maybe the obfuscation comes where you go, well, maybe we can become like gods. Like, there's this old argument. I forget who it is. Protestant theologian. Something it goes like, well, there's an old story about a priest and a physicist are talking to one another, and the physicist basically says, "Look, you know, we can be gods ourselves. I can create, you know, glass out of sand." So he picks up some sand, puts it in a machine, and turns it into glass. And he goes, "Look, I am a creator now. This didn't exist before." Picks up another thing of sand. And as he picks up another thing of sand, the priest looks at him and goes, "Okay, now create the sand." And so we're always going to be beyond the foundation of actual creation of truth. Mm-hmm. Because even Bitcoin relies on pre-subscribed notions, entire built societies, and really even the understanding that truth is something we wish to seek anyway, which it seems like that's the case, but you can never be sure. So I don't think we're ever really going to be at threat for some sort of profound acquisition of all absolute truth, unless we quite literally stick a thing in our heads that turns us into virtual entities. And then at that case, we're not really even human anymore. I don't really know what we would be. But I think that's all kind of cyberpunky philosophical. Whether that plays out, who knows? I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, I had kind of, in my mind, rationalized this as when you're looking at verse 4, "Come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves." Well, then it's semicolon, and then the last statement is, "Otherwise we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth." That's, like, kind of curious to me why they already knew that. But just focusing on the "so that we may make a name for ourselves," this to me says this was something built out of hubris, and such that they could reach heaven or be gods without fulfilling their earthly duties? I mean, is that way off?
Yeah, I think that would be consistent with probably post the fall, the idea of what human beings are supposed to be doing anyway. Mm-hmm. But even remember before the fall, that first of all, disobeying is a pinnacle mark of humanity, mm-hmm. the expression of individual sovereignty. And then secondly, the desire to trump, firstly, knowledge, because they do eat the apple of knowledge. And then there's one more apple that they don't get to that God says, okay, I got to throw them out, because if they eat that one, it's over, is the apple of, I forget what the actual specific term is, but from the tree of life, mm-hmm. and to obtain eternal life. Mm-hmm. And maybe I don't know the notion of making a name, because I'm looking at the Hebrew here, and the Hebrew for let us build is quite literally to build for ourselves a city. City translates to excitement in that verse, by the way, in the Hebrew as well.
Okay.
And a tower, rostrum, or bed of flowers at the head towards the heavens to do a name to remove or be dispersed above the face, the whole earth. So name is, at least in the Hebrew, literally reflects an identity of something. Mm-hmm. And so perhaps name quite literally means let us create our own identity. Mm-hmm. Let us become something other than what we were meant to be.
Gotcha.
And perhaps, I mean, God's response there is relatively clear. If they do this, then nothing will be impossible for them. He's not saying then they will become better than me. He is quite literally saying if they do this, then they can do anything within that space, the universe, whatever it is. And to do so, perhaps, is to take away the essential qualities of what it is to be human, to kind of be incapable of doing everything. Maybe, and to draw that back to Bitcoin, again, I don't actually think there's a huge comparison there, because Bitcoin only performs a truth operation and not the whole truth operation. Mm-hmm. But nobody 20 years ago, are we at 20 years ago? Maybe nobody 30 years ago could have ever predicted the implications that we're talking about today for a what they were calling nerd money when it first came out, right?
Right.
Nobody ever could have predicted that. And we, the two of us, are not only both relatively informed on the philosophy of it, but certainly optimistic about its outcomes. And I have absolutely no idea what's going to happen as far as what we change into because of Bitcoin. But I can assert this. Bitcoin will change us far more than we change Bitcoin.
Well, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I, you know, this has got me thinking and reeling and all of that. But, I don't know if I have anything more productive to offer on the philosophical end. This was just something that struck me. And so I texted you about it.
Yeah. Now you can see I've reread this cryptocurrency document about six times now, fully highlighted from beginning to end. And it is I love Nick Land. I truly do. I think his rhetorical style, the way that he writes, I think is really communicable to me the way that I think. But I also think this is a guy who, you know, grew up deeply into the cyberpunk community. And I think as somebody who's both very good at communicating the principles that the cypherpunks were trying to push out into society, I think he just has an inherent way of communicating that both explains it clearly, but also as profoundly as it needs to be explained. And so I'm going to throw this document at you with all my highlights in it, and perfect. Then we can come back to that at some point in a few months and really tear into it, because there's a lot here.
Perfect. Well, I'm gonna tack on a short 5 minutes here on actually getting started on Lightning, and I think that the easiest way to do it, Bird will attest, is by getting yourself a little Raspberry Pi, something that can be always on, low power. You're not paying for, you know, exorbitant energy costs for. And using one of the available operating systems for that Pi, whether it be Mynode, Raspi Blitz, or, you know, the one that I'm using is Umbral. It's totally free. And it's structured kind of like an app store where you can install various apps. You can easily connect all of your other wallets to your full node. You can connect Lightning and you can create a Lightning node. I think at this point, this is just the easiest. You're not having to mess around command line. You're not having to do anything. It's literally plug and play. Flash the Umbral OS onto an SD card, throw it in the Raspberry Pi, plug in the Ethernet cord, plug in the power cord, plug in an external hard drive. I've got a 1 terabyte, and turn it on, walk away, go out to lunch for 3 hours and come back, and you can log in from any computer on the network using the IP address. And then you'll see it start syncing.
And that Raspberry Pi gets hooked up to your Wi-Fi, right? Or your Ethernet. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Right?
Hard line. And then the
so you literally, no matter where you are, as long as you're connected to that router, you put in the same IP address into that search bar, right? And it just takes you to yours, right? Is that, yes. That's how that works, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And off of my local area network, my internet here, the Umbral will operate an Onion hidden service. And so I have a Tor address that I have bookmarked in my phone's Tor browser that I can log into my Umbral from anywhere in the world. As long as
when you log in, you still have to put in username, password, and all that stuff,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. So it's not like somebody could just walk into your house and put that same thing in and now they see your wallet.
Right.
Which is something at first I was thinking about.
and this, to be clear, you know, I am an advocate for having cold storage for your savings and then, mm-hmm. you know, having some walking around money that you don't, you know, if you lose it, it's not the end of the world. And so I would not. Now, you can use your Umbral, like the Spectre wallet on it to help create, mm-hmm. Help you create a multi-sig storage solution. But I would not keep, huge amounts of money on the Umbral. Not to mm-hmm. say that I know it's not safe, but just to say best practices, keep your savings in cold storage. You can upload a watch only wallet into your Umbral so that you can add funds to it, but you can't take them out. And then have some money on there for Lightning, opening Lightning channels for payments and stuff like that. And you can even route payments. But that I wouldn't keep more than you're comfortable losing on your Umbral. I think that's fair advice for anything that is quote unquote
clear to me.
Connected to the internet. I think I gave a little bit of an explanation on how the Lightning network works in the beginning. Obviously it's a little bit more complex than that, but I think that was a decent explanation. And, in the show notes, I'll plug some resources and then I will also plug, I'll put in, the address for a node that may or may not be mine that if you connect to, I may or may not be able to match liquidity. We'll see. I've extended that a lot early and now I am very, I don't know how much more I want to commit to LN, but if you do connect to my node, I'm pretty well connected. So you, can just have one connection. If you want to use Sphinx chat, if you want to, pay for a mug on Rollo's store or whatever it is that you want to do. If you connect to my node, I think you will not have any routing issues. So, you can use that. I don't know if I have anything else, Bird. You got anything?
Let me see. I'm going to hit my notes up. I'm going to bigwig you here. Let's see. I'm very active in our community, very popular, very sought out. No, I don't have anything actually. No, not a thing.
All right. Well, this has been apparently an episode of Into the Cave, and until next month,
weird, right? Eat it. Squaw.